Welcome to the Movement Church Podcast. Our vision is to be a movement of people finding their way back to God. For more information about Movement Church, including attending a worship experience, getting connected, or to give online, please visit movementcolumbus.com.
This morning, we're starting a series called Forward, and for the next 4 weeks, we're going to talk about what it is that makes movement, movement. What are the things that we care about? What are the things that are part of our DNA is the word that we use over and over again. What makes us who we are? What are the things that we're willing to, these are the hills that we're going to die on. These are the things that we care about more than anything else. And if you've been around for a while, you're going to recognize, hopefully, these things. These things have been part of our DNA from the very beginning. They're things that we want to continue to return to. And if you know anything about what it means to lead a group of people, you have maybe heard the phrase that vision leaks. That at the beginning, we all know where we're going and we all know what we're doing and we remember why we're doing it. But then once you get into kind of the grind of the everyday, you step back. Maybe this has happened to you at your job and you go like, why am I even doing this anymore? Like, why am I putting this TPS report together? Like, I don't even know. No? Office space? No one. Okay. I don't know why I'm doing these things that I'm doing. And it just becomes this kind of routine that doesn't mean anything. And so we want to be people that continually remind ourselves, why do we exist and why are we here and where are we trying to go? So this morning, I'm excited that we're going to jump into this together. As JJ said, my name is Sarah, and I have the privilege of being part of the teaching team here at Movement, and I'm excited for us to get to kind of read a passage together and to see what it is that God has to say to us about one of our values, which, as you've already seen from what Tom had to say, is about serving this morning. So each week, maybe you've picked up on the fact that each week we try to have a big idea of our message. And sometimes we wait till the end to give you the zinger, and then you go like, oh, it's so brilliant. I'm going to think about that for the rest of the day. But this morning, I want to give it to you right here at the beginning because it's going to frame everything that we talk about. This morning, our big idea together is that we are not here to recruit volunteers. We are here to unleash leaders. Now, I don't know about you. I know we didn't watch a movie trailer, so you don't have an epic feeling deep in your soul right now. But I just think that that phrase is so epic, that we exist to unleash leaders. Like, it makes it sound like you guys are all just chomping at the bit, which is what, from your faces, you're doing. You're chomping at the bit, ready to get out there and ready to lead, and you're so excited about what it is that God may have for you and how he wants to use you. Like, to me, that sounds thrilling. And I think maybe part of that is because, and I'm guessing that you can all relate to this, I have been in spaces in my life, various times throughout my life, where I have just been a recruited volunteer. Like, I'm just a warm body filling a position. I'm just like a cog in the machine. And I was thinking about this week, like, when are some times that that has happened to me? And maybe the clearest example, the very first time that I traveled to Thailand was in between my junior and senior years of college, and it was shortly after the tsunami that happened at Christmas time in 2004. Most of you, I think, were alive then. Okay, so we traveled over there just a few months after that to help do some tsunami disaster relief. And we were on this island that was about an hour off of the coast, down off the southern tip of Thailand. And there were 60 families that lived on this island. It was a fishing community. And every house, apart from one, had been completely knocked down. All of the families had been relocated off of the island. They were living in these shanties that had been put up for them that were about the size of like a 4x4 space, is where families were living. And they were just waiting for someone to show up and to help them reconstruct a home so that they could move back to their island. So we got to spend several weeks down there helping these people build their homes. But what became pretty quickly clear is that our team was too big to be able to for us to all have a job that was like really important. So we like didn't have enough tools, or we didn't have enough people who actually knew what they were doing. Like, I know how to use a saw, but I don't know how to build a house. So like, I need someone to tell me like, cut the board here, you know, like, I don't know. So we would get off the boats when we would get to the island in the morning, and it was like a race to see who could get an all-day job. Like, who can get the job that's going to last all day? Like, I can be the person who's going to run the planer, because, like, that's easy. You just bring me the wood, and I can run it through it. But several days when we would get there, we wouldn't be fast enough getting off of the boats, so we wouldn't end up with an all-day job. And so on more than one occasion, I ended up with jobs like, Sarah, we want you to find all of the bad coconuts on the island and put them in a pile. I'm like, okay, is that like really important? They're like, I mean, yeah, it's important. I'm like, yeah, that's a no, right? So we would just like walk around and pick up coconuts and like shake them. And we would put them in this pile. Like, here's the bad coconuts and here's the good coconuts over here. We took like hours doing that. I'm not joking. And then several hours into this, we feel like we've like kind of cleared this whole space and all the bad coconuts are separated from the good coconuts. And then we went over to the person who was leading our team and we said, okay, like, here are all the bad coconuts. What should we do? And they were like, why don't we move those like 6 feet over there? And I'm like, this is not a job. Like, you just don't have anything for me to do. You don't need me to be here moving these coconuts from one side of the island to the other. This is ridiculous. I was not in any way inspired by my work while I was there. I was just a recruited volunteer. There was nothing in particular about me. Like, any doofus could have picked those coconuts up and moved them over. There was nothing special about my role in that moment. And I think that sometimes when we think about service, and maybe particularly when we think about service in a church community, it just feels like you need a warm body. That's all you're looking for. Like, okay, I hear you. You need me to join the setup team because, like, you need someone who can carry stuff. I see what you guys are doing here. You just don't have enough people to get your work done, and you need my help. And we start to feel like you're just looking for a warm body to fill a role instead of really understanding what's going on here. And I don't want you to take my word for it, okay? Like, I'm not just jaded because of the coconut thing. Like, I want you to really see that when God talks about service in his word, it's not just for the good of the task, it's for the good of the community, and it's for the good of your own soul. And again, it's like I paid Tom to say that, but I didn't. I really didn't. He said that on his own. And we're going to see that from Scripture this morning. Before we even jump into the passage, I want you to see kind of the first idea that's going to weave its way through this passage. And if you've had any sort of role in leadership, whether that's been in a school situation or in a work situation or with your family, I think that you can probably relate to this. The idea is that leaders, when they're building their team or when they're working with their team, they want a team that has these three characteristics. They want them to be unified, they want them to have clearly defined roles, and they want them to be steadfast. Like, no matter what happens, we're like in it together. We're gonna figure this out. One of my very best friends is the head soccer coach at the high school that I work at. And I think he's an excellent coach. I'm not just saying that because he's my friend. Like, he's an excellent coach. They've gone to states and won states several times, and he knows how to like draw things out of the boys that are just amazing. And he's really good at this, like, I get my team to work together. I unify them around a one common idea, but I also help them understand what their specific tasks are as they're on the field. And then we work together, no matter how bad the deficit is, we're gonna push through because we're a team when things are going well and we're a team when things are a disaster. On the other hand, this summer, I went to a whole bunch of little boy t-ball games. Some of you are parents of young children and you have gone to your fair share of young children's sporting events, which is less like a sporting event and more just like a group of children running around on whatever field you happen to be at. They're just chasing the ball around. Like, no one knows, like, what position am I in? I don't know. It doesn't matter because the ball's over there, so I'm going to go get it. So watching these kids play t-ball, my favorite little boy was the catcher, who in t-ball, like, you don't really need a catcher, but whatever. They always had one because, you know, they have enough kids. And so he would always just stand behind the catcher's plate, just kind of like, you know, like swinging his arm around like this, and the ball is like way over here, and he's just like looking like, I don't know, I'm just here. If I'm supposed to get the ball, I'm gonna get the ball. The boy who played first base never moved off of first base. He literally just held his hand straight up in the air. So like if the ball flies past him over here, he's like, that's not my problem because like I'm on the base and here's, so I mean, if you can't get it in my mid, I don't know what to tell you. And then the rest of the boys are literally just like running around like crazy. When they would go from third plate back to home base to try to score, it just turned into like a giant game of tag, you know? They're like weaving all over, they're back to second base because like, you're not gonna tag me with that ball because I'm gonna make it back to home plate even if I have to run all around this field to get there. It makes no sense. Because as a team, they haven't really figured things out yet. They're not really unified. They just wanna be the one that wins the game ball at the end. They don't really have clearly defined roles, and they certainly are not steadfast. In fact, I was at enough of those games to know that the coaches on both sides tell each team that they won every single time. It's amazing. No one ever loses. So there's a difference, right, between what happens with five-year-old T-ball and what happens with a varsity-level soccer team. We begin to grow. We begin to understand that working together as a team is about more than just I'm the star and I'm shining. It's about taking a step back and recognizing I'm part of a body here. I'm part of a community here and I have a role to play. And the leader is looking for that in his people. Now, I want to read you this passage because this isn't just a soccer idea or a baseball idea or a coconuts on an island in Thailand idea. This is a biblical idea. We're going to read from Ephesians 4 today, which is page 896, if you have a Bible that's from the chair underneath you or the chair kind of right around you. Ephesians chapter 4. And this is a passage that maybe you have heard before, particularly when we're talking about serving and we're talking about gifts. Gifts is a word that we like to use a lot. When I say gifts, I mean gift. Not like gifts, like we're not gonna put any gifts up on here, okay? Like, not like that. It's a whole new world here. Gifts with a T. We talk about this a lot in the body of believers, that you have a gift, that you have a spiritual gift, that God gave you that gift for a reason. And Ephesians 4 is a chapter that we go to a lot when we're talking about gifts. So maybe you've heard this before, but I think sometimes we forget to start at the beginning. We're really good at cherry picking verses right out of the center of the text and not really giving a good look at the whole body of what's going on here. So we're going to start at Ephesians chapter 4, verse 1, and we're just going to read it, okay? We're going to read the first 16 verses, and as we're reading, I want you to pay attention to those three ideas. Just have them in the back of your mind, that a leader is looking for a team that is unified, that has clearly defined roles, and that's steadfast, okay? So you be thinking about that as you follow along with me. Ephesians chapter 4, starting in verse 1, page 896. Therefore, I, a prisoner for serving the Lord, this is Paul talking, Paul the apostle. Maybe you've heard of him. He's became a Christ follower during the first century, shortly after Jesus' death and resurrection, and becomes a missionary to basically the whole known world during the first century. And he wrote quite a few of the letters that are in the New Testament. So Paul is writing this letter to a group of Christ followers in the city of Ephesus. Therefore, I, a prisoner for serving the Lord, beg you to lead a life worthy of your calling, for you have been called by God. Always be humble and gentle. Be patient with each other, making allowance for each other's faults because of your love. Make every effort to keep yourselves united in the Spirit, binding yourselves together with peace. For there is one body and one Spirit, just as you've been called to one glorious hope for the future. There is one Lord, one faith, one baptism, and one God and Father who is over all and in all and living through all. However, he has given each one of us a special gift through the generosity of Christ. That is why the scriptures say when he ascended to the heights, he led a crowd of captives and gave gifts to his people. Notice that it says he ascended. This clearly means that Christ also descended to our lowly world. And the same one who descended is the one who ascended higher than all the heavens so that he might fill the entire universe with himself. Now, these are the gifts Christ gave to the church: the apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, and the pastors and teachers. Their responsibility is to equip God's people to do his work and build up the church, the body of Christ. This will continue until we all come to such unity in our faith and knowledge of God's Son that we will be mature in the Lord, measuring up to the full and complete standard of Christ. Then we will no longer be immature like children. We won't be tossed and blown about by every wind of new teaching. We will not be influenced when people try to trick us with lies so clever that they sound like the truth. Instead, we will speak the truth in love, growing in every way more and more like Christ, who is the head of his body, the church. He makes the whole body fit together perfectly. As each part does its own special work, it helps the other parts grow so that the whole body is healthy and growing and full of love. Now, as we work our way through this passage, here's the first thing that I want to draw your attention to. And hopefully you saw those ideas, being unified and having clearly defined roles and being steadfast. We'll come back to each one of those. But as you look right at the beginning, if you go back to verse 1, "Therefore I, a prisoner for serving the Lord, beg you to lead a life worthy of your calling, for you have been called by God." This passage, what's coming next in these 15 verses that follow, it connects to all of us. We don't get off the hook, right? Because like, well, I'm not like on staff at the church. I'm not like a professional Christian. I'm not a leader of my team. I'm just like a, you know, I show up and I serve once in a while. I've only been around for a few months, so I'm not really on a team at all. I'm just kind of feeling it out and figuring out what I'm doing. Again, this isn't a recruitment pitch. I just want you to see what Christ has to say to us here. This is for all of us. As Paul writes this letter to the people in Ephesus, he's not saying, pastors, huddle up in this room over here and you read this part of the chapter because I have some specific things to say to you. No, no, no. He's saying to all of us, I urge you to lead a life that is worthy of the calling that you have received. If you call yourself a Christ follower, we are all called to what's coming next in these 15 verses. We are all called to be leaders in the sense that Paul's going to lay out in these next few lines. And I want you to see what he has to say first, because for many of us, when we think of leaders, particularly maybe if you work in the business world, you start to think of the person who is your boss or the person who runs the company. And you think about the kind of characteristics that they have. They know how to command a room. They know how to make wise financial decisions. They know how to hire and fire. They know how to say the right thing at the right time. They've got a perfect handshake. Like, you're thinking of all of the things that make these great leaders around you. And I don't think that our first thought when it comes to leadership is what it is that Paul says next. Look at his next words. Always be humble and gentle. Be patient with each other, making allowance for each other's faults because of your love. Now, if we can just take a step back and kind of look at the world that we live in today, I think we could say pretty easily that most of the people that the world acknowledges as the greatest leaders around us, whether that is in business or in sports or in politics or in fashion or in education or whatever, we would not probably say that those people are marked by the characteristics of being humble, gentle, patient, and making allowance for each other's faults. No way. Not if you want to lead. If you want to lead, you take advantage of every fault around you. It's your job to expose how weak everybody else is so that you can climb over top of them and get to the top of the ladder. That's what it looks like to lead in our culture today. But Paul is saying, no, 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 that's not the life that you've been called to. As we seek to come together as a group of people, and as we seek to be the leaders that Jesus has called us to be, Paul says, here's where it starts. It doesn't start with you knowing that you're the greatest. It doesn't start with you knowing that you have some perfect mission that's been designed by God. Now, we're gonna get there, but where does it start? It doesn't start with you, it starts with the other. It doesn't start with what's best for me, it starts with what's best for the person next to me. How can I be humble? How can I be gentle? How can I be patient with you? I hate being patient with people. I work with 16-year-olds all day long. It's terrible sometimes. 16-year-olds, if you're in here, I love you, but wow, sometimes you're crazy. I'll stand in front of my class. I teach 10th grade. I'll stand in front of my class, and I'll have just walked through this whole printed sheet of instructions that is in their cute little hands and also written on my board. And then I'll say, okay, now I want you to go ahead and get started on step one. And invariably, there's always the kid who says, hey, Miss Knepper, yeah, what are we supposed to be doing right now? I'm like, ask your neighbor. I can't even do it. I can't tell you again. If you're a parent, you know that feeling, right? You've just said to your kid 19,000 times, pick up your shoes and put them by the door. And they go, what? What? I don't know. What do you want me to do? Where am I supposed to go? What am I supposed to be doing? My first reaction is not to be gentle and humble and patient and allow you to have faults. When we think about leading, our first thought is, what can I do to make myself number one? Paul says it's different. It's different as a community. We care about each other more than we care about ourselves. And then this brings us to the point where we then see that Paul says, now look, as you are concerned about each other, as you are working together, as you're thinking about your neighbor more than you're thinking about yourself, this brings us to verse 7, where he says, now however, now, we work together, yes and amen, but however, you each have a gift. We are not just some homogenized group where we all say the same thing and dress the same way and look the same way and are good at the same things. That's not who we are. We are each gifted in different ways. Some of you are so good at connecting with people, it is unbelievable. Sometimes when I have to meet new people, I have this anxiety well up inside of me, like, you're going to tell me your name and I'm already going to forget it 3 seconds later, and then you're going to come back next week and I'm going to say, like, hi, is it your first time at Movement? And then I'm going to feel like an idiot because you've been here for 6 months. Like, I just feel this, like, real overwhelming anxiety about new people in my world. But some of you are so good at that. I watch it happen. I stand in the back and I watch. There are a handful of you that, like, literally every person that walks in the door, you're hugging them. How is that possible? Like, how do you have that many hugs inside of you to give to every person that walks in this room? You know everybody. You love everybody. You know all of their stories. You know when they're in the hospital, when they're having a new baby. You're so good at that. Some of you, like Tom, he just loves, like, I'm going to get up early in the morning and ride my bike over here and set things up. When my alarm goes off in the morning, I want to die. I actually want to die, okay? It happened this morning. My alarm went off and I thought, why? But some of you are just so, you know, you just go like, this is, I'm up. I would love to do this. Some of you, the thought of, like, if we ever asked you to come up here and, like, share a little bit, you think, like, first I would pee my pants and then I would never come back. Like, I'm not, there's no way, I'm not doing that. But this is what's so beautiful about the body. Because each one of us are gifted in different ways. And here's what I want you to see about your gift, okay? Because this is where I think we get off track sometimes. We live in a society and in a culture that is all about consumerism and is all about what can I get from you. You're all on the offensive, the defensive. Sports, clearly my thing. You're all on the defensive all the time, right? You see a phone number calling you on your cell phone, and you think, like, no, I'm not going to answer that because that's probably somebody who wants something from me. You're walking through the mall and someone from one of those center kiosks says, like, excuse me. And you go, like, nope, I don't want your hand cream and don't touch my hair with that straightener. Mm-mm, no, I know what you're doing. I know. We are always looking out for, like, how are you trying to take advantage of me? And so when we stand here in this community at church and we say, look, you've been given a gift and God wants you to use that gift. For some of us, we go, like, I see what you're trying to do here. You're trying to take advantage of me. You're trying to use me and take my time, and you're gonna, like, waste me. I'm not gonna have anything left. I'm gonna be so exhausted. I'm gonna be so frustrated. I'm sick of this. And we don't understand what the gift was given for. Notice that when we talk about these things, they're not called like weaknesses. They're not called like, here's your propensity or here's your, and not even a strength. It's called a gift. Now, typically when we receive gifts, we're excited about them. Like unless it's, one time I got a gift from someone who will remain nameless and it was just a box of paper. That was my Christmas gift. Not even like printer paper, just like awkward paper. I don't know, like what, I was like 15. Like what a stupid gift, right? Like I wasn't excited about that one. But most of the time we get a gift and we go like, yes, thank you. So these things that you have, these abilities to serve, Christ calls them gifts. They're yours. And you should get it and you should go like, yes, look at mine. It's not the same as yours, but that's okay because this is the one that I got. And the verbiage in this chapter says that Jesus chose your gift for you because he knows you. He knows who you are. He knows where you come from. He knows your personality. And he picked the gift, or for some of us, we have more than one gift. He picked the one that was perfect for you. Not so that you could go like, now, nobody try to take advantage of me or try to steal this from me. But he gave it to you for a reason. And I want us to read these last few verses together again. Let's start in verse 14, okay? So the couple of verses before talk about how the people who lead the church, it's their job to help the community begin to understand and figure out how have you been gifted to prepare you to use your gifts. And then when we get to verse 14, Paul is talking about what happens when we use our gifts together as a community. 14, here we go. Then we will no longer be immature like children. We won't be tossed and blown about by every wind of new teaching. We will not be influenced when people try to trick us with lies so clever that they sound like the truth. Instead, we will speak the truth in love, growing in every way more and more like Christ, who is the head of his body, the church. He makes the whole body fit together perfectly. As each part does its own special work, it helps the other parts grow so that the whole body is healthy and growing and full of love. You know why service is one of our core values? It's not just because we're a portable church and like, we really need you, or we're just all gonna be sitting on the floor. Service is one of our core values because if you don't serve, I can't reach my full potential. If we aren't using our gifts, we cannot be mature and complete. We can't be, look at that last sentence. When we each use our gifts, it helps the other parts grow so that the whole body is healthy and growing and full of love. When I think about Movement Church, and look, people, I've known Movement Church like from day one, and I love you. I love you. Mark and Kristen aren't here this morning, so I feel like I can talk about them a little bit. There are few people in the world that I respect more than our lead pastor, Mark, because of the way that he leads us as a community of people and the way that he cares about you and the way that he wants us to grow and that he wants us to be full of love. When people walk away from Movement Church, I hope that what's going through their head is, man, that's a group of people that is healthy and growing and is full of love. And the only way we get there is if each one of us is able to say, here is the gift that I have, and I'm going to use it for the good of God's kingdom. And when any of us pull back, when any of us say, no, 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 not me, not today, I've been there, I've been taken advantage of, I've been manipulated, I'm not interested in that, you cannot have my time, you cannot have my gifts, the rest of the body suffers. And this analogy of the body is perfect. Any of you who have had any sort of injury can understand this perfectly. That when part of your body isn't able to work up to its full potential, the rest of your body has to overcompensate. When you've broken your leg and you have to wear a cast, the rest of your body has to pick up the slack from your leg not doing its job. And so you get like that, your armpits hurt really bad from those stupid crutches, but your arms get really ripped and you think like, this is pretty good. And then when you take the cast off, right, your leg is all like atrophied and disgusting and all like little, and you think like, is this like a three-year-old's leg on my body? What happened? Because if every part of your body isn't doing its job, the rest of the body suffers. This is why we have to be people who serve. We have to be people who serve, not because we're trying to take advantage. We have to be people who serve because as Christ followers, we only reach full maturity when we're all playing our part and we're all using our gifts. And so as we close this morning, here are some final things that I just want to say to you. We want you to use your gifts, not because we need you first and foremost. In the same way that when it comes to our time of giving, we want you to give generously, but not because we need your money. Now, we do. We need your money and we need you to serve. We do, that's true. But that's not the primary reason that we ask. Hear me clearly. We want you to serve because, first of all, it is good for you. And secondly, it's good for us as a community. We can't be at our best unless every person is playing his part. And so as you think about what is this supposed to look like, some of you are like all in. You serve on like 19 different teams and you are like in it to win it. You are engaged. And some of you haven't gotten there yet. And so here are just a couple of things that I want to say about that. If you've never thought about what your gift is before, if you're like, I don't know, I think I like to hug some people, but not everybody. So I don't know, maybe that's not my gift. I don't know. There are a couple of chapters I'd like for you to read. Romans chapter 12 and 1 Corinthians chapter 12. These two chapters lay out a whole bunch of gifts, spiritual gifts that exist. And as you read through those lists, I would encourage you this week to ask the Spirit of God to communicate with you. God, what gift have you given me? Because it is true that every Christ follower has at least one. Ask God to communicate to you, what is the gift that you've given me? As you read those lists, think about like, okay, when I read this, what sort of things do I really like to do? And what sort of things do people tell me that I'm good at? What is the gift that God is giving you? And then let me also say this. We live in a culture that's all about you have some specific, uniquely designed purpose that you can use to just turn this whole world upside down. We use phrases like world changers. Now, I believe that God wants to use the church to transform the world. Absolutely, I believe that. But our rugged individualism as American people has caused some of us to miss out on the needs that are right in front of us. Because we look at the needs around us and we go like, yeah. I know that that's the need that exists right now. But look, God has called me to something way bigger than that because I'm going to like start an organization that's going to feed every hungry person in all of Southeast Asia. And I'm going to do it tomorrow. Even though I'm 19, I've never even been to Southeast Asia. I'm going to do it. I'm not trying to crush your dreams. But I do want to say to you that one of the ways that God leads us to the places that he wants us to serve is by opening our eyes and to look at what are the needs that are around me. What needs exist right here, right now? And if I'm going to look at those needs and say like, well, that's beneath me, and that's somebody else's problem, then I would direct you back to verses 1 and 2 of this chapter. Be humble and gentle. It's not about you being the best. It's about us finding ways to use the gifts that God has given us, even if it's in ways that seem really small and that seem really minor. Because hear me, it's not about how great the service is, it's about how that service is transforming you and transforming us. Pay attention to the needs around you and ask God's Spirit, how does my giftedness intersect with what's happening right in front of me right now? There is a space for God to use your gift, no matter what it is. And we need you to do it because we want to be a church that is healthy and growing and full of love. Will you pray with me? Father, I thank you for who you are. And I thank you that you have gifted each one of us, that you have gifted us in ways that are unique. You have gifted us in ways that are personal, that you know us, that you know exactly the kind of gift that would suit us best, and that you gave us those gifts not just so that we could be constantly expending, and feeling like we're being zapped by our usage of the gift, but God, you gave us that gift because our hearts and our souls need it. We need to be pushed to serve, to think about somebody other than ourselves. We need to be reminded on a constant basis that my life is not all about me. My life is first and foremost about you, Jesus, and secondly, about the people that are all around me. And so whatever you're gonna call me to, whatever gift you've given me, and however you want me to invest in this world, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna do it because I need to do it for my sake and for the sake of those around me. Jesus, I ask you this morning that through your Spirit, you would really make it clear to those of us who don't know what our gifts are. We don't know what we're supposed to be doing. We don't know how we're supposed to serve. Jesus, will you open our eyes? Will you help us to see it? Will you help us to be people that take this seriously? Thank you for what you're gonna do. And Jesus, ultimately, I ask that you would make us a body that is healthy and growing and full of love, so that when people who don't know you walk through those doors, they are blown away by what you, God, are doing. And that there would be no option but to say, this God is real and this God is necessary. Jesus, make us a people who know you and who serve you well. In Jesus' name, amen.